pianist Leifova Ansnes is famous for his clear, crystalline technique and raw piano power. Coming up, we'll hear the Norwegian pianist in concert in Copenhagen, teaming up with the Danish National Symphony to play the Piano Concerto by Robert Schumann on the next Performance Today from APM.
Join us for Performance Today this afternoon at 1 o'clock and again tonight at 8 p.m. on WMUK 102.1 FM, online at WMUK.org from Western Michigan University. The time is 7 minutes past 10 o'clock. The Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra continues its season with a concert in Chenery Auditorium tomorrow night at 8 o'clock with a prelude talk at 7 p.m. The guest artist is a harpist, Emmanuel Cesson, and here to talk about it is the music director and maestro of the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra, Raymond Harvey. Nice to
have
you here.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
This concert brings together music of an American, John Corigliano, Russian, Lier?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then we have Mendelssohn's Scottish Symphony, which I look forward to talking about later as we progress through the program. I have a feeling that your love for Mendelssohn is quite strong. You
know? Well, who could not love Mendelssohn? I mean, there are people that who have to play Mendelssohn who probably do a lot of cursing because of the number of fast notes. But I mean, it's marvelous music. It's just precious. It really is.
So tell me about the balance of this concert and how I think it really does have a little something for everyone.
Well, I think part of my rationale in programming this first of all started with the harp. It's wonderful to have a harp soloist. It's not something we do very frequently. The literature for the harp certainly lends itself to a smaller venue. So the fact that this concert was scheduled for Chenery rather than Miller Auditorium really made great sense. You'll get a much more intimate feel for the instrument in that smaller venue. I wanted to feature the strings, since we have the strings of the harp, and I decided, well, let's feature them in something for strings alone. I always like to include some American composers' music, and I don't believe we've played any Corigliano in my memory. This little piece that we're starting the program with is called Voyage. And I must admit, it was a piece that, as I was exploring, I had not heard it before. Mm-hmm. I had heard of it, but never really explored the music. It's very charming. Mm-hmm. It is actually a setting of a poem that John Corigliano, the composer, set this for chorus. That's the original version, the choral version.
I thought it was the flute.
Oh no,
version that was the original.
The chorus is the original version, and it was so good and so popular that he then arranged it for flute and orchestra. He arranged it for string orchestra. There's probably an arrangement for accordion, you know, if you look far enough.
John Corigliano is one of the American composers who is now what might be called a statesman, or you mm-hmm. know, really. His career has, this piece, for example, was composed in 1978, I think.
I thought a little earlier than that, but you might be right. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And he comes from a musical family. His father was a concertmaster of New York mm-hmm. Philharmonic, I think. And so down the line, have you had an opportunity to meet
John Corigliano? No, I have not.
Do you admire any of his other works?
I know very little of his other music, I ran across a line that a critic wrote saying that John Corigliano's music is some of the best music that most people don't know. So it's great to explore it. It really is. This piece, this Voyage piece, no one in the orchestra had played it, which was kind of astounding to me, because we have players who play just about everything. I look at it, of course, knowing me, I look at it from the choral point of view. And I spent a lot of time with the text of the Baudelaire poem, which is what it comes from, seeing how the text fits the music. And informing my conducting of the string orchestra the way it would be if it was with the text.
Would you tell us about the meaning of the poem? What it generally talks about?
And I probably, after we take a little break, I can dig up the some of the actual translation. But the poem is an imaginary vision of what heaven would be like. The title of the poem is actually "Invitation to a Voyage," and the voyage is to heaven. And it's talking about what it will feel like in heaven, how much peace and gentleness and calm there will be. It's very, very lovely.
My guest is Maestro Raymond Harvey, who will conduct Voyage by John Corigliano tomorrow night to open the program at 8 o'clock in Chenery Auditorium. Here is a recording from the Louisville Symphony Orchestra. We've just had an introduction to a piece by an American composer, John Corigliano, from Maestro Raymond Harvey, who will lead a live performance tomorrow night at Chenery Auditorium. The piece is called Voyage. What a challenge to play with delicacy and unity.
Yes, I mean, it's rewarding as well. And those very last lines from the choral version of this piece that you just heard, the very last refrain is talking about a vision of heaven, and the words are, there is nothing else but grace and measure, richness, quietness, and pleasure.
Do you know the instrument that is most associated with heaven?
Well, of course, the harp.
The harp. This is many layers of relevance.
Serendipity.
Here. Yeah. This incredible piece for strings that kind of evokes an afterlife, and then bringing on the wonderful harp soloist.
Yes, I'm sure that harp soloists hate the fact that their instrument is always associated with heaven, but... and many of the harpists I've met are hardly what I would call heavenly creatures.
Very down to earth.
But, you know, so be it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Emmanuel Cesson, the harpist who is the soloist in tomorrow night's concert. Mm-hmm. What can you tell me about him?
You and I both remember when he was here in Kalamazoo several years ago on one of the Young Artists Series recitals at Dalton here at Western Michigan University. I remember going to that concert being just awestricken by his virtuosity on the harp. And I also remember that then he was wearing his hair quite long, down to his shoulders, and he seemed to have a fan club of young people screaming for him every time he came out on stage. I think he has grown up a little bit since then.
He was 19 or something.
Yes.
Like that. Very young, yeah.
But it's always great to have fans. He really is very much now the top harpist in the world. He started at a very young age. I think you can still find clips of him playing the harp when he was like 7 years old. He spent time as the harpist for the Paris Opera. And now, just I think last year, he won the very coveted position of principal harp with the Metropolitan Opera in New York.
So a French harpist who now lives in New York City, mm-hmm. And has really paved new ground as a harp soloist.
Yes, I think so. Yeah. The one thing I don't know is whether or not he has spoken to any composers to commission some more works for the harp, because the literature for solo harp and harp concertos is rather limited.
Even though he was very talented when he was young, it still must have been a bit galling to have people, first of all, say, oh, you're a wonderful harpist, and you're a boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. There have been a few who have, you know, fought that. And we have to remember that the previous century, most orchestras worldwide only had men in their orchestras. The idea of a male harpist was not unusual at all. If I'm not mistaken, the first inroads that women musicians made in large symphony orchestras was with the harp.
That's right.
Then after that, other instruments like the flute, and now everything.
Yeah.
Brass
section,
you know,
percussion.
Musical instruments should have no gender.
Let's talk about what it's like to hear a harp in a room, because we don't get the opportunity, not even people who play music often get the opportunity to hear a grand harp in the same room with them.
Right. First of all, I think a lot of people don't realize how complicated the harp is, just the instrument itself. Mm. And at the pre-concert lecture that I'll be giving tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, I actually will give a little tutorial of the harp, how it's constructed and what the harpist has to do, why it has 7 pedals and where they are. And the difficulty of playing a harp piece from memory, it's a little bit more difficult than some other pieces, because you have to also memorize your pedal changes to get the right notes at the right time. And some of the times that you're changing your pedals, you're changing it because of something that you need later on in the piece, not currently, which is a real tour de force to try to remember, oh, I've got to do this now because 3 measures later I'm going to need that note. but it's a wonderful instrument. The resonance is quite beautiful. Mm-hmm. And it has many different colors, many capabilities. The thing that most audiences think about when they think about the harp are these wonderful glissandos up and down, which are undoubtedly the absolute easiest thing to play. Anyone can do that. It's all the rest of the stuff that makes it a virtuoso artist.
The power of a harp can be subtle, but it's always noticeable. I've been in rooms where a group of musicians has been playing their instruments, and everyone is accustomed to that. And the harpist will come and open up their harp, and as soon as they start playing, the whole room changes completely.
Yeah, it
has an astounding effect.
Yeah, it's that heavenly effect.
Maybe. The piece he's playing, would you talk about the Glière Concerto?
Yeah, the Glière Concerto. Again, one of the few concertos for harp. It's a very tuneful work, very light in its impression on the listener. That doesn't make it easy. It's in 3 movements. The first movement is rather dramatic, showing off all the capabilities of the performer, and it has a very long cadenza in it where he really gets to shine. The second movement, the slow movement, is a theme and variations movement. Slow, pensive. It has a theme and 6 variations, and the variations are all little gems. There are some that are fast, quick plucking notes with the strings accompanying with pizzicato. There are others that are these languid, drawn-out phrases, and others that are just a little bit quirky here and there, but very, very satisfying. And then the final movement is a romp. It's a little 4-minute lively piece. It sounds like it could be part of a cartoon. lots of offbeats and dance rhythms in it, and just a lot of fun.
Well, let's hear the final movement while we have the time here with Maestro Raymond Harvey. The concert again is tomorrow night at 8 p.m. and arrive at 7 p.m. for a prelude presentation. I did hear a rumor that harps or a harp may be available for people who want to get up close.
Yes, we're doing a little special thing before the concert. We have managed to put together a harp demonstration, shall we call it, in the lobby before the concert. Audience are invited to come, not only to see some harps up close, but even to try some out themselves. It'll be a little petting zoo for harp.
If you go shopping for a concert harp at that famous Chicago firm, what do you think you might end up having to pay?
Oh, the sky's the limit. you won't see those at our little petting zoo. We'll have some smaller ones. I think we're aiming for the non-breakable types. You know, it's as in any musical instrument, if you want to buy a high-quality instrument, you're paying for the craftsmanship of whoever built the instrument, the quality of the wood and the resonance of the instrument. So it can be pricey.
Here's Emmanuel Saison in a recording with, I think, the Bavarian Symphony of the final movement in the Glier Concerto that he's performing tomorrow night. That's Emmanuel Saison in a live performance of the Glier Concerto. My guest here, Maestro Raymond Harvey, will be conducting Emmanuel Saison and the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra in a concert tomorrow night. That is a joyous piece.
Oh, it is.
I'm not
really
going to
is.
Say heavenly, though.
No, it's fun. And I think certainly one of the pleasures in watching a harp soloist is a visual pleasure. Just what the person does physically to make the sounds.
I found this performance. It's also available on YouTube. So if you're curious and have a minute or two to go to your computer, you can see Mr. Saison performing this very work. And it is an exciting visual. Yeah. And I like to think of him also accompanying the opera now at the Metropolitan Opera in New York.
Yes. I mean, you know, of course, everyone knows about the Met, but I don't know whether people realize that that orchestra, the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra, is truly one of the great orchestras of the world. The level of playing, the amount of playing they do, great, great musicianship. And in recent years, there's been a huge turnover of personnel in that opera orchestra. Many of the older people have retired. And when I went to a performance at the Met, maybe about 2 years ago or so, I looked down into the pit and they all look like kids. I mean, they all look like children that had just graduated from Juilliard. So it's a young group now, and the artistry is fantastic.
It goes to show when the principal clarinetist of the Met leaves, he ends up as principal of the New York Philharmonic.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
You know, Anthony McGill, who is going to be back in Kalamazoo on the Fontana series this season.
Oh, great.
Okay, well, we can't get too carried away. Emmanuel Saison is the soloist tomorrow. The concert begins at 8 o'clock. There's a prelude at 7 p.m., and this is at Chenery Auditorium, which, as you said, is a smaller and a beautifully resonant space to hear a soloist like this.
Yes.
The concert concludes with Mendelssohn's Third Symphony. Was it last season that we heard Elijah?
Two seasons ago.
Mm-hmm. That was still an unforgettable performance.
Thank you.
And you've programmed, I think, the Reformation?
We've done the Reformation Symphony. We've done the Italian Symphony, number 4. We did the Lobgesang, number 2.
Number 2.
Which is not done much. That's with chorus.
Right.
And one of my favorites was we did the complete Shakespeare play of A Midsummer Night's Dream with Mendelssohn's incidental music that goes along with the play.
Here's how I feel about Mendelssohn. Very popular, a great name recognition, but still, I'm not sure he's played often enough.
Oh, I think he's played quite often.
Okay.
I think the trouble is people hear his music and they recognize it because it sounds familiar to them, but they don't necessarily say, oh, that's Mendelssohn. I mean, when you think of things like the Wedding March, I mean, yes, he's played a lot. they say one of the things about him as a composer was that he was really desperate to have his music be well-liked. He didn't want to push the envelope. He didn't want to do anything too outside the mainstream. He wanted the audience to enjoy it, to come away with smiles. And I think he accomplished that. It's polished music. It's elegant music. It's often playful and quixotic in a certain way. But it is easy on the ears.
If you do want to find him in a darker, more romantic mood, the Third Symphony is where you'll find a lot of that music.
Yes. It's nicknamed the Scottish Symphony. And you do hear, as you listen to the music, a lot of the sea and the ocean and the what it would be like to be on the water in not good weather and in the dark of night. It's one of his few symphonies, I have to think whether it's the only one, that starts in a minor key and starts with a unusually somber choice of low woodwinds and violas. So you have this deep sea color at the start of the piece. And it stays in that somewhat brooding mood for a while before Mendelssohn shakes it off and decides, nope, let's bump this up a notch.
He was invited to go to England and tour sort of the United Kingdom at some point. Was maybe Queen Victoria. I'm not too sure of the royalty at the time. But because he was so well-liked country.
Yes. And what people don't know about him was he also was a rather decent sketch artist. He did some watercolors and things like that, and he very much loved nature and the sea. There are some drawings that he made that are quite interesting.
His upbringing included a lot of art. His
sister Fanny.
Yeah, she married a visual artist, and it just makes me. He was lucky enough to grow up in a supportive family where they focused on his musicianship and other learning.
He's one of the few famous composers who did not have, you know, a horrible childhood or a lot of strife in his personal life. Maybe that reflects in his music too, that it stays positive.
Yeah. He died young.
They all did.
And we know that he wrote more than one piece based on his travels to Scotland, the famous overture.
Yes, the Hebrides overture, yes. And also I don't know, I think there's a folksy feeling in a lot of his music from his travels to Scotland, from his travels to Italy, with the Italian Symphony. And as far as his orchestral writing, he does challenge the players. It's usually very exacting music, quick passages for the woodwinds, for the strings, for sure. He doesn't go easy on them.
Well, would you guide us through the rest of the symphony? Because when we finish up here, I think we'll have time to hear the first movement.
Okay.
That'll take us to the top of the hour. So if you'll give us a guide.
Okay. You'll hear the first movement, which, as I said, starts with the somber introduction and then becomes very dramatic in the middle of it. And towards the end of that first movement, just when you think it's about over, listen for the storm coming up. He suddenly starts this gale wind force, and you hear it surging in the strings and surging in the woodwinds. And then it ends with that same somber bookended sort of an ending to the start. The second movement is the scherzo, which is a little unusual. Scherzo is usually the third movement, but the second movement is a lively, lively scherzo. The clarinet leads the first melody, and it has as part of its melody what they call the Scottish snap. The little rhythm at the end of the phrase is a Scottish snap. Very, very fun and fleeting. The third movement is the slow movement, an adagio with a long singing violin line that sounds like it should be a song. Mendelssohn was a great composer of songs. He even wrote a series of piano pieces called Songs Without Words. And it's really poignant and melancholy. And then the final movement is a fiery allegro that he actually called allegro guerriero, a warlike allegro, with pounding rhythms, almost like marching troops going on in the timpani and the brasses, and a very quick snapping rhythm in the strings and the woodwinds. The one last thing at the end of the last movement, he changes the character and suddenly brings back a joyous hymn in A major, just to send this thing off. It's a great symphony.
And a wonderful workout for the musicians.
Oh, yes.
Let's remind folks once again the details of the concert. You can find all the details and ticket information at the website kalamazoosymphony.org, .com or .org. You can also visit the ticket office or the downtown at the Epic Center. Showtime begins at 8 p.m., and there's a prelude at 7 p.m. My guest, Maestro Raymond Harvey, leading the program of John Corigliano, Glier, the harp concerto, and the Mendelssohn. So we'll finish this hour with the first movement. Any final thoughts, Maestro Harvey?
I think this is a concert everyone will enjoy. Don't miss this one.